committed to the principles of budget feeding, which require of us high levels of accountability, Parliament, and to the South African public at large. As we deliberate on this report today, I'd like to extend our appreciation to each and every member of the portfolio committee for the constructive input and suggestions that you have made to the ministry and the department in the year under review. We will continue to value your individual and collective guidance as we discharge our mandate. In tandem with the increasing developmental mandate, the details of budgetary allocation from the National Fiscal Trust has been increasing over the past decade. In the last 5 years, this allocation has increased steadily from 4.7 billion in 2001 and 2 to 25.3 billion in 2006 and 2007 financial year. As we look ahead towards the next financial year and the medium-term expenditure framework period, members will note that the further allocations that were announced by the Minister of Finance, Minister Trevor Manuel, are important in that he presented the medium-term budget policy statement to Parliament last week with indications of how the DPLG budget will also increase. Accordingly, the DPLG budget has now reached the 30 billion mark in 2007 and 2008, and this will increase approximately to 32.4 billion and 39.2 billion in the 2008 and 2009, as well as the 2009 and 10 financial years respectively. The management of these resources has been a key priority of our department throughout this period. We are pleased to announce that once again, the DPLG has received an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General. With high levels of managerial commitment, this annual report of 2006 and 2007 represents yet another milestone and a tangible set of financial and strategic outcomes as we endeavor to serve the South African public. The strategic objectives that guided our programs during this year were enumerated as follows, the 5 concepts that I will talk to. Ensuring stability, predictability, and efficiency of the governance system. Secondly, strengthening provincial governance and accountability. Ensuring effective functioning and stability of local government. Monitoring performance and evaluating service delivery, and strengthening the DPLG's corporate capability. We will discuss the details of performance in these areas today. In summary, it is clear that we have started to address some of the fundamentals with regard to the intergovernmental system, some fundamentals with regard to community participation and empowerment, the role of the institution of traditional leadership, and other key stakeholders in development. The 2006 and 2007 financial year was also an important year as we commenced the implementation of a 5-year collective program of these stakeholders. And this program is commonly referred to as the Local Government Strategic Agenda for 2006 to 2011. Previously, we indicated that some of the most basic fundamentals that must be addressed in this second term of local government relate to capacity, they relate to accountability and leadership at local level. Coupled with these fundamentals, practice also pointed to the need for policy refinement where appropriate in order to improve performance. These were the basic tenets of our approach for the consolidation since we initiated it in 2004 and 2005 through to 2006 and 2007 financial years. In the year under review, we have increased our efforts in supporting provinces, metropolitan and district municipalities, as well as local ones in general, but we focus on the district municipalities to develop growth and development strategies. This was the first time that this initiative was introduced at district level. All 46 districts and 6 metros were able to host growth and development summits with the full participation of community representatives and other important stakeholders. Furthermore, by the end of the financial year, our department had established support systems that would ensure a 100% adoption rate of municipal IDPs. This was a significant improvement from the mere 40% adoption rate that was registered in the 2002-03 financial year. We have also continued to mobilize and deploy technical experts to various municipalities. It has been encouraging to see the growing number of individuals, public and private organizations who have offered their expertise in these capacity building initiatives. Our interventions through the deployment of technical expertise for purposes of infrastructure development have borne fruit. The spending patterns of municipalities have improved from some individual cases, which in some respects would record 50% of spending at the end of a financial year, to a significant percentage of 98% from 2005 to 2005 and 6 financial year to 2006 and 7 financial year. We are able to record this because we have significantly improved our monitoring and evaluation system, and in identifying the need for improving infrastructure spending, amongst other things, we have been able to see these changes in some of the individual municipalities. In recognition of the need to balance our social development delivery programs with a more strategic approach to economic development, we launched the National Framework for Local Economic Development, complemented by a capacity building program. Our intention is to contribute towards the efforts of government and other sectors in society in creating an improved environment for economic development in local areas. Of significance has been the greater attention that we have paid to accountability measures and the enforcement of existing local government legislation. The municipal performance management regulations that we published are intended to provide a framework for employment of municipal managers, the capping of bonuses, and clearer procedures for performance review. We have complemented this initiative by providing leadership development programs to mayors, to municipal speakers, to councillors, and municipal officials. This initiative has been undertaken in partnership with the South African Local Government Association, as well as the local government sector. In conclusion, this annual report provides greater detail on these important initiatives. The programs are presented in the published version of the report in the following sequence. We have presented the administration program, which includes the monitoring and evaluation work that we do in the newly established branch of monitoring and evaluation. We also have a program that deals with governance, policy and research, and this program includes traditional leadership and associated institutions. It is this program that we are also currently coordinating our project on the policy review process as informed by the experience of the past years. We also have a program that deals with the Urban and Rural Development Program. That is our third program according to the published report. And we also have a program on systems and capacity building. It includes the details that I have referred to with regard to a project consolidate. It also includes a sub-program on disaster management, which focuses on our efforts on disaster management. I should say that also the governance program include our work at the SADC at international level. The fifth program in this list deals with free basic services, the provision of basic municipal services and infrastructure. And the last two programs deal with the provincial and local transfers as well as other transfers to organizations such as SALGA, the Cities Network, and other organizations who receive funds from us in addition to the provinces and local governments through the transfers, the NIC, Municipal Infrastructure Grant, and the systems grants that we have as a conditional grant. We hope that with the support of all our stakeholders, we will stay on course and focus on being a reliable institution in facilitating service delivery and development in our country. We value the oversight role of Parliament and this portfolio committee, and we hope that our department will continue to benefit from the interactions that we will have today and in the medium to long term. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Gigi. We appreciate your input for this morning, and members are raring to hear the elaboration of some of the programs you have identified. Shall we now proceed and deal with the governance policy and research? Oh, I was looking for the man. There he is. Oh, I saw the name, but I didn't see the man.
Hello, Chair.
You're sitting on my right. I don't know whether it reflects your views these days, but go ahead.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good morning, and good morning, honorable members, colleagues. I'm going to be reporting on Program 2, which is the Governance Policy and Research Division. The outline of the presentation is on slide 2. I'll briefly take you through the purpose of the program in our strategic plan and annual report, introduce the chief directorates and look at the capacity of the branch, overview our branch performance in 2006-07 as against the estimates of expenditure which you approved as Parliament, and then lastly deal with the financial position of the branch at the close of the financial year. And if I may just respond to some of the issues which you as a committee have raised in your previous reports as well as in your session with us earlier in the year, Chair. The purpose of the program is on slide 3. It is, in general terms, the policy division of the department, and as the Director General said, this branch is coordinating the policy review process. In addition to that generic function, there are a number of specific sub-program elements within this branch's responsibility, including intergovernmental relations, provincial municipal international relations, development planning, local economic development, the institution of traditional leadership, and international and donor relations in support of South Africa's foreign policy goals and policies. We currently, on the existing establishment on slide 4, we have 4 chief directorates corresponding to the sub-programs in the estimates of expenditure. The first is headed by Mr. Forti, which is intergovernmental relations. And the second is headed by Professor Sobahle, which is the traditional leadership and institutions chief directorate. Mr. Madurai has recently been appointed to the position of Chief Director Development Planning, and is currently also responsible. Certainly. I don't know if that was in fulfillment of your mandate, Chair. It was sort of a half wave. Professor Sobahle is not with us today, but Mr. Mayram is acting. Mr. Mayring is the stand-in for Prof. Mr. Madurai is over here. And Mr. Tulo is on assignment in Zambia, head of the International Donor Relations Chief Director. And the acting chief director is Pumla Mkhebo. Our branch is at near full strength in terms of filled positions. There are a number of more junior positions which we're currently filling. We've had two directors resign during the period, and those posts are advertised, and we're in the process of filling them. We are, however, looking at establishing capacity within the branch, given its responsibilities for the policy review process over the next several years. Turning to the performance of the sub-programs on slide 5, the measurable objective is to maintain effective and predictable relations between national government, provinces and municipalities by developing and implementing policy systems and support programs to improve governance in accordance with government's program of action. Now, this particular measurable objective will talk to several of the strategic objectives alluded to by our Director General in the strategic plan of the department. The first sub-program is intergovernmental relations. The primary objective flowing from the promulgation of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act by Parliament was to set about the implementation of that act, and the targets for the year were to develop a set of practitioners' manuals, how-to manuals, which could assist all levels of government and practitioners to begin to implement this legislation. And that target was achieved with the launch of the practitioners' toolkit, and which numbered 10 in total, covering a range of different matters connected with intergovernmental relations at the NCOP summit on IGR, which was held earlier in the year. In addition, we worked on the first report on the implementation of the Act. The main focus of the report was obviously on establishment-related issues, and we took that report as we obliged to through the Governance and Administration Cluster, of which we are co-chair, and submitted that to the Cabinet Lekgotla. The next phase in this process of implementing the Act is twofold. One, it talks to the need to deal specifically with the relationship between sectors and municipalities, and I'll talk to that a bit later in one of the other sub-programs. But secondly, to begin to develop a set of macro-measurable indicators for intergovernmental relations, and that is the work that we're currently engaged in as part of this strategic plan for this financial year, and it is something that we will report against in the following session next year with the Portfolio Committee. In addition to these estimated expenditure targets, this Chief Directorate also performs numerous functions relating to the day-to-day administration of intergovernmental relations, including issues connected with powers and functions, assignment of responsibilities, and increasingly in the area of intergovernmental disputes, where we've played a role in supporting the Minister and others to exercise the responsibilities under the framework legislation. The development planning sub-program built on work which had commenced in 2005, and that was really to facilitate and manage a national program of engagement on municipal IDPs. And as the DG has already reported, one of the achievements of this program, which is in its third year, was to reach the target which we set for ourselves to have 100% adoption of IDPs. That was important because with the adoption of the IDPs was the adoption of the municipal budget, which meant that municipalities were in a position to function as organizations. We're building on that program in several ways. One of those is to ensure that we're paying great attention to sector alignment issues, and secondly, that we're focusing more attention on the actual budget relationship with the IDP. So in the next several years, we'll focus much greater attention there. This program had a number of other secondary strategic objectives, including engaging quite forthrightly with concerns around the credibility of IDPs. We adopted a national framework for credible IDPs, which we developed in consultation with all spheres of government and national departments, and we used that credibility framework as the basis for assessing all 283 municipalities, IDPs in the country. The other secondary objective was to ensure the proper connective relationship between our sector departments and our municipalities through the IDP engagement process. And we've achieved, if not better results, then at least a much more thorough understanding of the contingencies of each of the sectors and how they impact on municipalities. And that is work that we're building on as we move forward. We'd also intended to produce an amendment to the Systems Act to build in some of the practical experiences of IDP engagement over the last 3 years into minor technical reforms, which would reinforce the spatial component of the IDP in intergovernmental planning. That initiative reached a certain point where we had a draft bill, but it has since been superseded by the policy review process, where the policy matters are best dealt with in one place, as opposed to ad hoc legislation at this time, and it will be taken forward in that process. Our local economic development sub-program concentrated on introducing a national statement on the local economic development responsibilities of government as a whole, but local government in particular, with the launch of the local economic development framework in May 2006. This was a very important initiative because for the first time you had a national policy statement which began to link the developmental functions of local government into a economic paradigm which included several other initiatives at national government level. We launched that at a national conference. I think several members of the portfolio committee did attend that conference. And since then, we've concentrated on two main areas. The one is taking forward the local economic development framework into a partnership with DTI and the presidency and ESGISA, and ensuring the proper synergies between all of those strategies. And secondly, the deployment of particular expertise into designated municipalities to support them to perform the local economic development functions. One of the critical areas that we need to look at going forward is the information and database that we have about local economies. This is something that is not evenly distributed in our country, and it's an area that we're going to give considerable more attention to over the months and possibly years ahead as we build our information base about the forces that drive and shape local economies and how people and communities interact with local economies. In addition, a presidential project was the completion of growth and development summits in your district and metropolitan municipalities. With DTI, we produced a set of guidelines which were adopted at MINMEC and subsequently at the PCC, if I recall correctly. And these then formed the basis for growth and development summits held throughout the country. And at the end of the reporting period, we'd completed 52 growth and development summits. At this stage, as the DG has already alluded to, all growth and development summits have been completed. So this provides a very useful basis for government and for the department in particular to begin to spatially engage the various LED initiatives of local governments going forward. Under the Traditional Leadership and Institutions sub-program, the continuing work is to implement the Traditional Leadership Framework Act. There were some important initiatives in this regard in the financial year. One was to elevate this function to a strategic objective within our strategic plan for the department, which was a very important initiative. Two was to launch a comprehensive program of support for the institution in all of its facets so that we could have a nationally coordinated response to deal with the intergovernmental responsibilities that exist at all three levels with respect to implementing this legislation, and in particular to concentrate efforts to support provinces on the reconstitution of traditional councils. The program of support did go to Cabinet in November 2006, and we've recently completed a consultation process with all provinces, including managed traditional leaders, and we've been in discussions with National Treasury about how we can properly resource all of the aspects of this program in a phased-in transition. And in addition to that, we're looking at our own capacity as an organization to administer this area of work, which is of considerable importance in our country's development. International and donor relations is the unit which supports the international cluster and the governance cluster to support governments and South Africa's foreign policy obligations. As members will recall, there is a binational agreement with the government of the DRC, and increasingly in the international field, when international issues are on the table, there are governance issues involved, and ordinarily many of those come to our department in some shape or form. And one of the important initiatives is clearly the assistance to the DRC government. What that has entailed is, through a memorandum of understanding with the counterpart minister of our ministry, we have been assisting in a variety of ways our counterparts to develop a law which will, in a sense, establish the various structures of provincial, state, and local government under the DRC constitution. It's called an organic law, which is a French expression translated into English, but essentially it's a general law implementing the constitution at an institutional and structural level. And currently I understand that this legislation is before the DRC Parliament, and hopefully our support will have contributed to the successful conclusion of that process. This unit also has been responsible for coordinating and managing our donor funding. The majority of the donor programs administered by the department are administered under this chief directorate. And clearly, the effective management of donor resources and appropriate accountability for donor expenditure is of concern to the department. And hence, we instituted standard operating procedures and a monitoring and evaluation system, which would allow us better to track the utilization of our donor resources and to provide regular reports to the senior management. And we use our executive management system to receive updated reports. We use our audit committee process to look at issues affecting, where we report on issues affecting our donor program. So that is an important initiative. We're looking now in the next phase at the role of the DPLG, if any, in respect of donor coordination on a national scale. And we're working with Treasury, Foreign Affairs and other departments to look at what role we can play there and how we can perhaps utilize our standard operating procedures as benchmarks within the system. On slide 7, we respond to some issues which the committee has raised in your previous report, as well as with us in the earlier part of this year when I think you looked at the budget. There were a number of issues that the committee raised. The one issue was in relation to international and donor relations, concerns the nature of the support that we were providing to DRC in meeting international obligations. I responded to that. As I've indicated, we have been supporting the government to develop draft legislation on decentralization. There was an issue raised by the Committee on Local Economic Development about the need to support municipalities to adopt realistic local economic development plans in accordance with National Framework for Local Economic Development. In fact, this was an issue which was addressed, as I recollect, to SALGA, but it was something that falls within the department's responsibility. And we have, as reported there, we've taken this forward, this matter forward both through our deployment of technical experts into these areas, but also in our overall work to support the implementation of the local economic development framework. Under traditional leadership, the issue was raised that we needed to compile a list of issues raised by traditional leaders in connection with rural development broadly. We do now, for the first time in the country, have a comprehensive program of support, which includes rural development. It is a program which is, it has been consulted with all provinces and will continually be consulted on with traditional leadership. And as part of that program, we are constantly monitoring the sort of issues that are arising as we look at building our own capacity going forward. So increasingly over the years ahead, we can expect this function to deal less with the implementation of legislation and much more with the actual developmental role of the institution, particularly in regards to the development of our rural areas. In addition to that, we work in a hands-on way with the provinces to support the provinces to implement their own legislative responsibilities and to undertake their own capacity building initiatives. We were asked to monitor the implementation of provincial and other legislation designed to transform the traditional governance system. And this monitoring takes place through the biennial reports to the extended cabinet as part of the POA. We do report on this function as part of government's program of action. And through hands-on support to provinces and sector departments. In particular, we've been interacting with sector departments with respect to the assignment of functions to the institution. That is a matter that will eventually lead to an interministerial committee that will coordinate the assignment of functions to the institution. It has been a complex matter to deal with, and I'm sure that the committee has questions in this area, the chief director would respond to. The concern raised under intergovernmental relations was that the establishment of district forums is not translated into regular meetings. This is something that we hope the toolkits are going to assist us to overcome, but also through the set of indicators for IGR which we're currently working on, to which I've alluded, we will then have a monitoring and evaluation framework within the context of government's overall monitoring and evaluation framework for the implementation of the Act. In addition, in this context, it was also suggested by the committee that Alexandra should be used as a model for cooperative governance. It is something that we're going to look at when we use case studies in the policy review, but also we've, through our own branch, we've interacted with the presentation that was made to the committee on your visit to Alexandra, and we're factoring that material into the policy review process, and we'll follow it up by way of a case study. We believe that the nodes are an important area of case study because they demonstrate the practicality of a spatial focus on our particular regions and areas of the country in a dedicated and hands-on way. There was concern about sector alignment and contribution to IDP. This is indeed a concern in our department. It is not something that is going to be solved automatically, because coordinating a variety of different functional responsibilities requires municipalities to be both a planner in its own right for its own functions, but also as a site for intergovernmental planning. To assist us in this process and flowing from the IDP engagement process, we've introduced a national planning forum, and this will comprise sector departments, it comprises provinces, it's of a very senior level of representation, and through this forum we plan our strategy and operation for IDP engagement and build consensus around that. But also we look at particular sector issues. Most recently at the forum, the transport sector was examined in some detail, and this forum will serve that basis for bringing a network of practitioners into greater alignment. In addition to that, we have prepared a guideline on sector master plans flowing from the work we've done on Project Consolidate, and we are working with sectors to assist sectors to reorient their strategic and operation functions where necessary to support municipalities. These processes, including the National Planning Forum, will also do include representation from our state-owned enterprises, which, as the committee will know, is an area that we are giving ongoing attention to in the broader quest for alignment between municipal IDPs and plans of other spheres.
Looking at the expenditure slide, we had a little bit of over-expenditure in the branch. It was quite marginal, but when the finance people do their reshuffling, we had a very reasonable and satisfactory expenditure record. Thank you very much, Jacob.
Thank you very much, Derek. That's governance, policy research. Honorable members, we will move to the next presentation and then we'll take questions before they rust. So we'll ask Nelly to do the presentation. Where is she? Right there. Okay. Go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair, MP, and other members of the portfolio committee. The Urban and Rural Development Program report for the financial year 2006-2007. Overall, the structure of the presentation is mainly based on going through the purpose of the program, the strategic objectives of the program, the achievements over the year under review, key challenges and strategic priorities for the 2007-2008 financial year. The purpose of the program is mainly to manage, coordinate, monitor and measure the effectiveness of the integrated implementation of the Urban Renewal Program and an integrated sustainable rural development program across the spheres of government. The strategic objective of those two programs on the management side is mainly to provide support for coordination of the implementation of the programs across spheres of government. Activities involve formulating practical approaches and systems for strengthening cooperation between the spheres of government agencies, and NGOs. On the monitoring side of the two programs also is to look at the, it manages the national systems to enable reporting on progress and evaluation of impact. Activities in this area include developing and maintaining information systems for improved monitoring and evaluation of the program. Within the year under review, in the alignment and in the integration, it did seem that there were several undertakings that were conducted by the department, one of them being the induction workshop held for new councillors for about 10 of the nodes, some of them being urban and others being rural. There were also guidelines for sector departments participating in the nodes produced, and these were disseminated. There were also technical support to rural nodes provided through the IDT program. IDT is a support agency for the program, and we do utilize quite significant staff from IDT in supporting the rural nodes in particular. And some of the work that they do sometimes are either institutional-based or technical by nature. There were also orientation workshops held for support officials in the ministries that have political champions within them. This was mainly to try and help them get a sense of what programs or projects are underway within the nodes in the instances where the political champions would need either additional information or need to visit those areas. A URP implementation framework was also completed within the year under review. A program management toolkit for URP nodes was also produced. Halifure URP was supported with LED expertise. And a technical support was established for Motherwell and Tatsani. And that's something that we would be looking at reporting much more in detail in the next financial year. There was also support from DET, DSD, and Department of Health, together with SAPS on working with provincial counterparts to obtain the MTF commitment for the nodes. And what you'd see are just samples of some of the activities within the nodes. I often found that it was difficult to really get a sense of what happens within these presidential nodes. But when you look through the profiles of the things that have been undertaken, it gives you a better sense of some of the challenges that the areas are facing by nature of either environmental conditions or just by way of physical state of some of those spatial areas that the nodes concentrate on. There was partnership established with DBSA to support the M&E component of the program. There was also partnership established with NDA to support the ISWP nodes. And this is mainly to start looking at the impact assessment of either the identified critical projects or anchor projects within the rural nodes. Partnership with Business Trust to support nodal economic development. Economic development profiles were produced and completed for all the 21 nodes. And in some ways, these are beginning to address some of the challenges in getting credible information about economic activities. And we do hope that together with others, we would be able to assess and use this information much more to a greater good in terms of improving the economic conditions there. We continued partnership with IDP to support the ISWP nodes and nodal coordinators in all the ISWP nodal areas. An M&E forum was established for improved data collection and monitoring of National Sector Department's contribution. Research was conducted to reconfirm the ISWP nodal status of municipalities affected by the border realignment. To some extent, it does seem that those municipalities are actually doing perhaps slightly better. One would have expected that it could have been detrimental in a way, but they're doing slightly better than some of the other municipalities that we had that were not affected by the cross-border realignment. Communication conference was hosted for...
No, I'm just saying, I'm sure you mean cross-bounding rather than cross-border.
I see. Thank you for that change. Communication conferences... Thanks, Jim. Communication conference was hosted for nodal communicators. Newsletters for Rural Focus and Urban News were also produced twice in the year under review. There was mobilized support from Department of Communication for website development in the rural nodes. It is a project that's still underway, and we're hoping that there will be some results towards the end of the current financial year. Impact assessments were completed for Alfred Zoe and Malusi. There was also support for political champions visits in Hale Shiwe, Inc., Motherwell, Mtansani, Halakadi, and O Asambo. There was also four impact assessments presented, the findings, and these were either in four urban nodes and two rural impact assessments. And this was really to try and track some of the anchor projects that were established by the program. So in a way, if you do go around the nodes, there would be some significant projects that have been undertaken over the years. What you see there is the center in Hale Shiwe that was partly supported through the urban renewal program there. Detailed progress reports were submitted to cabinet in July and January of 2007. ISWP and European M&E framework being operationalized in the provinces. That was also an activity that was given attention during the year under review. Completed documentation of URP lessons learned, and then there was also the updating of the ISWP URP website. There are, however, challenges that were experienced by the program within the year. One of them is the tracking of financial protocol commitments by sector departments. This, to some extent, has been less than optimal, and in the current year, one of the initiatives will be trying to see how to improve those systems or the approach itself in trying to monitor the commitments from sector departments. Economic information and capacity to manage economic growth potential is still weak within the nodal municipalities, and to some extent, the nodal economic profiling partially addresses this concern, but we do feel that there is still a greater need to engage with municipalities in means and ways of either having a clearer understanding of the economic futures or the capacities to be able to do so. In some instances, it does seem obvious that perhaps there might be duplication in trying to insist on every single nodal municipality having their own LED framework, when the impacts of the economic initiatives perhaps could be broader than those limited boundaries, so to say. So a sense of looking at regional context of economic potentials would be perhaps much more a useful exercise than producing their own key, their own individual LED strategies. High staff turnover rates within the nodal municipalities remains a concern. This we see either in the project offices by way of staffing in those offices themselves, and continued efforts would have to be directed at those levels, just in terms of time lost in getting people back to speed again in support for critical projects. Mainstreaming of program activities either from district to local municipalities in the urban renewal projects, or from the rural areas in terms of district to municipalities, but in the urban areas from urban zone to, you know, main kind of city management processes. I think that remains a challenge, perhaps on the basis that the urban renewal programs were dealt with only as projects, so to say, but the attempts are being made to try and ensure that either in their future mentioning all the poverty zones within the urban areas could become critical areas of engagement within the planning processes. The same would apply with the rural areas where the district was the main point of contact and the actual delivery happens at the municipal level, so support to those areas in dealing with critical challenges would need to be examined. In terms of strategic priorities for 2007-2008, one of the things that we are looking at is to continue the partnership with Business Trust, mainly to strengthen the potentials that exist or that have been identified through the economic profiling exercise. You would note some of the activities that were outlined in the nodal economic profiles. An Indaba was held recently that looked at some of the possibilities that exist. And in the year currently, the initiative is to try and go further with some of those potentials that have been identified, but also working with key partners like DCI and the local areas themselves, the provinces, and all the other support agencies that have been set up to support economic growth aspects. We do, however, realize that meeting basic services is a fast prize within the nodal areas. The next stage will be to say once we've made those basic service provisions, then possibilities of looking at how we exercise the potential that exists in economic terms would be an area that we hope that partnerships of this kind could help in facilitating. We will continue with the work with IDT and NDA in terms of targeting resource for the rural areas. NDA is coming on board mainly as trying to look at the impact assessment components of the rural nodes, and IDT has been a supporter of the program from its initiation, and the hope is that we can optimize some of those commitments in the years ahead. We also do hope to use the URP Technical Support Facility. This is one that has been set for Eastern Cape Province with support from the European Commission. And the hope is that that could help focus much more attention in those areas and help give some directions in terms of lessons learned for other areas as well. There are other players within Eastern Cape, and one of the hope is to try and consolidate the input either from partners who are operating in those areas, but also to see how we can strengthen the link between the provinces and the towns in those areas or the small municipalities in those areas. We hope to complete the ISRDP European midterm review for impact assessment and lessons learned. The program by 2011 would have gone through the 10-year cycle, so we are at the stage of perhaps beginning to be a lot more critical about the intervention and what we have learned through the process of using this approach. We'll continue to monitor and evaluate the framework and work with the provinces as a way of assessing any of those key impacts that the program might have. By way of improving knowledge about the nodal programs and measuring impact, We hope to produce and publish program newsletters. This will be either Rural Focus or Urban News. And this is something that has been done in the past, but perhaps in terms of being much more forthcoming with the information and sharing it much more broadly, we hope that we'll begin to interest other municipalities that perhaps are not part of the nodal municipalities themselves by way of starting to communicate the lessons learned. We'll continue to support the political champion visits, perhaps with some revisitation on how we do that and how much mileage we can get from those processes. We hope to improve the institutional support program and capacity building program for economic knowledge within the northern municipalities. My previous presenter has already referred to the aspects of ways of trying to deal with the economic challenges and engagement with other departments in addressing them. Engage sector departments and budget allocations to resolve the obstacles of to potential economic projects. Also, as indicated before, the IDPs, we do find that there is still that gap of linking the IDPs to budget. So even though the nodal municipalities may have their IDPs in place, in terms of linking those IDP priorities and their budget allocations is something that we would need to give closer attention if we are to realize any of the projects. One aspect is that within the economic profiling exercise that has just been completed, you may find that a project has been identified, but if you go to the IDP, it's not actually listed within the priority projects of the municipality. So that would, in a way, entail engaging with those councils in much more detail to assess how they arrive at their priorities and what they hope to achieve in the kind of the budget allocations that they provide. We also think that it's important to look at the spatial planning component and land use management, again, by helping guiding decision-making processes in these budget allocation mechanisms. In some instances, it might seem that the priorities have been set and the priorities are right, but in terms of the actual spatial context within which projects are being implemented, that perhaps coordination is not happening at the right time. So there could be budget allocations, but because of other things not being addressed, those projects may not take off within the planned period of time. We do hope to monitor these targets through annual reports from 2008, 2009 to 2011. The hope is that we should start having some form of nodal reports, if you like. So annually we could test the state of the nodes as a way of guiding ourselves in ways of measuring the impact that the program has had. And that's something that we think we can't just do in 2011, and that perhaps it's a good time to start from the mid-term review of the program to engage with aspects that could be towards the end of getting an assessment for others who are not nodal municipalities at the moment. By way of the resources for the program, mainly the budget for the year was allocated through management, the urban renewal program, management components, and then the M&E components. And the same applies to the rural ISIDP and ISIDP M&E program. Overall, the expenditure was at 8.4 million, and in the current financial year, it's standing at 11.2. Mainly with the understanding that this program works with other departments or other sector departments in contributing to the activities of the node. And that's the report. Thank you, Shane.
Thank you very much, Nelly. Members, there's the two presentations. I suggest that we start with the first one and then come to Nelly's. Okay? So we'll start in that order. First question. Peter. Ngosia.
Thank you, Chair. And thank the presenters for the succinct presentation. It's very helpful. Starting with Derek. If I look at the purpose of the program, you know, I mean, one of the anomalies, I think, of this department has been the title, and you think the title of work, provincial, and the title is very work done. So it's the Department of Provincial and Local Government, but in reality it's the Department of Local Government. But it has been, largely. Okay, there's been a thrust towards intergovernmental relations of late. But one of the things that does strike me, one looks at the purpose of the program, is that it says in the area to provide policy advice and research support the development monitoring of and the performance of provincial governments. Now, if you look at that package of objectives, I've never seen anything yet in 13 years that pertains to that, ever. So the question I put is other than the white paper, the review that's coming up, where does one give effect to that objective of advice and research dealing with performance of provincial governments? And I don't see it either, incidentally, as a sub-program here. So that's my first question. Secondly, on the sub-program dealing with traditional leadership and institutions and the 50% compliance with the Traditional Leadership Framework Act, a question I have is, why is it so slow? And secondly, why? What has the department done to push the provinces to do more, to get it up to speed? Then, oh yes, well, the question was half asked by the presenter, but maybe why it's thrown back to him. The issue of the assignment of powers and functions to traditional leadership institutions thereof. What is the progress in that regard, and what sort of... I know we had a meeting with that National House the other day, and again, it was an issue raised in that agenda, but concrete progress in that regard. Then also the sub-program dealing with development planning. One of the problems is this, the Development Facilitation Act versus other legislative instruments, and when is government going to resolve that conflict between different pieces of legislation and who's responsible for land use and that sort of development planning? At the moment, we seem to have a confused scenario. And finally, on the budget, I know it's a very minor thing, I mean, it's just arithmetic, but the two columns there are identical, other than for the LED, which is 300,000 more, but the variance is zero. Surely it should say 300,000. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. Thank you, DG, and your team for the wonderful presentation this morning. Chair, on the first one, that's slide number 6. Let me just go there. On this Traditional Leadership Framework Act, which was passed in 2003, they say then the target measure or indicator, I suppose, for 2006 to 2007 financial year was to plan for investment in district housing as required by the Act. That is what is set up there, and then the actual progress is then that they actually, according to the information provided to the department, only 50% of traditional has been established, etc., etc. First of all, let's start with the traditional council. In terms of that act, these then tribal authorities had to be transformed from traditional authorities to be traditional councils with 30% women, etc., etc. So, does it mean, therefore, that only 50% in the country have been transformed? And bearing in mind that these traditional councils were based to establish the local and provincial houses of traditional leaders. I would like to do on this one to just get clarity from the department whether from 2004, 2005, 2006 then only 50% has been transformed. But while I'm still at that, the issue of the relations, although perhaps it would be more pertinent on IGR, but I miss it there. The cooperation between these traditional councils as well as municipal councils, bearing in mind that there is also a question of what committees there that are there, and bearing in mind that there is an act that we have just, a piece that has been approved support really to give remuneration to traditional, to municipal councillors around that issue. I'm mentioning this, Chair, because this, in our constituencies, is a very good example of cooperation between municipal councillors and traditional leaders, for instance.
And there is also some point of view which is also there.
Oh, sorry. So powerful. Sorry. That's understood that I'm speaking, not me. The second one is the question of the local houses. In the local houses, again, we had to disestablish the old regional authorities to establish these new. And in terms of the Act, they had to cease to exist 2004 at the end, or at the latest 2005. But I'm not so sure, because only 50% we're talking about in terms of traditional councils, nothing about the local houses, which are new structures. Just to remind the honorable members that the local houses are actually established along the lines of the teachings. Between the institution of traditional leadership as well as municipalities at that level. I don't see anything there. The other one, while I'm still on regional authorities, you will notice that in terms of white paper as well as in terms of the Act itself, the powers and functions of the kings and queens, it was stated that it will be part of the proclamation issued by the president. I've been probing this. I don't get an answer. At what stage is that process? Because some of the kings were actually heads of these regional authorities. And now they are dysfunctional, as we speak. We don't know what's happening about the expenditure that was there and everything and the staffing. And lastly, on this aspect, question of the Tlapo Commission. On the disputes and whatever. And then in terms of the Act, there were time limits for the Tlapo Commission to finalize its report. I'm not so sure whether they have presented the first report so far. And in terms of the reporting this financial year, how far did they go with their work? So that's an indication. The last thing that from page 5, I think Peter has actually sort of somewhat covered that. But I think Paul did actually indicate that there was over expenditure and that it was fine tuned. And because
No, thanks, Jefferson. Jefferson, my question, I'm not sure if I'll be correct. I think, Jefferson, much as this program is naturally has to be at the beginning, it touches or no, it lays the foundation for the other programs, and I'll raise them, the reason why. We have the Intergovernmental Relations Bill that has passed. The report, much as it reflects on the policy as well as the research that has been done, in the reality on the ground, always that there is this problem between the spheres of government. My worry, Jefferson, to be more direct, is that I don't know, because as DPLG, more so through the Director General, as a coordinating department in terms of these structures, we seem to be having a problem. Maybe that is not reported very clearly to us. One example is when it comes to the IDPs. Much as they might have been reported to be covered, you'll always detect or identify the challenge in the alignment of the IDPs. Now, the issue of cooperation, I know it's an ongoing thing because it deals with human beings. But I think there has to be a way where the department will set a target, and as much as one understands through SALGA that this is there is that arrangement. One is having a problem in terms of how to assess the implementation thereof. This is linked exactly to the issue of development planning also. Chairperson, when we go through the annual report, later we'll be touching on, there's this general reflection on municipalities not having capacity. Hence, I raise this issue that in terms of policy as well as research, there should have been certainty in terms of the level of understanding policies as well as, and I think we'll come later where the department in terms of page 222 and 223 as a response to the Auditor General's way of assessing, which impacts directly on the area of research and monitoring. So as I'm looking it. The issue also, Chairperson, of local economic, I think will be tied to the next program that we'll be dealing with. The challenge also is the true reflection on the ground. I'm saying maybe it will be at the time when we deal with capacity as well as where we will invest, also reflect on the report against reality on the ground. Then on traditional leaders, just to, because I think we agreed that when we meet with the department, those proposals that were advanced at the time shall be revisited so that we don't lose them, mostly in the presence of the Director General. Among them was that we require, and I think this is a relevant also unit, whereby all relevant areas as it relates to DPLG legislation that has to do with traditional leaders be identified, and implementation or non-implementation thereof be identified, so that we are then able to work out, it will inform our intervention or our support in terms of areas of weakness. So far that's the case. But Jefferson, my reference to 222, I think we will have to talk more on
okay.
The general. Thank you.
Okay, and then...
Thank you very much, Jefferson, and thank you very much, DG. Oh, I thought you said what? Okay, thank you very much. Actually, what I wanted to find out from slide number 5 is with regard to the LED framework. Actually, here it is indicated that 52 GDS was completed, but they are saying that only seven people were deployed to 17 municipalities. So I just wanted to find out, because these are only 17 municipalities, what is happening with other municipalities? Are those municipalities well at an advanced stage, or are you only targeting the municipalities that are still lagging behind? That's my first question. And my other second question is with regard to the slide number 6. Honorable Chief Nongkonyan has just touched some of the questions that I wanted to indicate, but when the National House of Traditional Leaders were actually giving us a report last week, they indicated to us that only two provinces they established a House of Traditional Leaders in the province, but others are still working on it. But here it is indicated that 50%. It is reported that the department got 50% was reconstituted. So I just wanted to find out, is this actually information? Why is this information not corresponding? And also, they also reported to us that they didn't know about the ward committees, so they are not involved, because they only knew after a long time, and they don't participate in the establishment of ward committees. They don't know their role there. So I just wanted to find out, are you also trying to engage them in several of your programs? And the other one is with regard to the number of district municipalities, that is slide number 7, the technical aspects that have been deployed there. Yeah, I understand that we still, most of the municipalities across the country are still badly with regard to the technical support of the technical people who can help those municipalities. So I just wanted to find out, how far are you with regard to that? Are you actually coming up with something that actually will convince us on the ground that work is going on and the municipality will be actually coming up with the programs that will actually, the delivery of service will be tangible so that everybody can see that. Thank you.
Chairperson, my surname is Sonto. Thank you very much. Chairperson, you can't put opposition in a strategic place where they will see the officials clearly and the ruling party in a certain obscure kind of a position. But Chairperson, I want to join those who have seen the presentation as being elaborate, and thank the DG for that. Whilst members might be acquainted with some of the specificities regarding the issues that I might be raising, I am broadly and generally interested into why there is in the outline or in the outline of the DG and in the presentation, there is a mention of the credibility of IDPs. Which municipalities do not want to toe the line, and why, insofar as the policy is concerned? That is one, Chairperson. The second one is, yes, one would go for partnership, especially in attempting to improve capacity levels. But how far will this go without the department being self-sustainable in capacity levels? Thank you.
Chair, Mr. Sonku and myself come some way in the legislature in the Western Cape. but I must relate to the committee, we had very strong rules those days that you must wear a tie. And one day he forgot his tie, so they gave him a tie to make a speech, and when he was in the middle of his speech, they took a point of order, why is he wearing an old NP tie? But I never saw somebody taking off a tie so quickly. we had many jokes left. Chair, I would just like to ask, when we finalized the bill on the intergovernmental relations, I was concerned that the local municipality, the B municipalities, is not directly involved in the premier's forums. And I now see that there is a concern that the district forum doesn't meet regularly, because I feel perhaps it is related that they are treated as second-hand municipalities. So I would just like to ask, what is the problem there exactly? As the experience now shows that the premiers directly involve the B municipalities, the local municipalities, and that there is no need for the districts to meet that often, or are they not involved and now they feel they are second-hand, that they don't want to establish something on a district level? My second question is just on the realistic LEDs, the word I used here, they're realistic. And we all know that people jumped on the bandwagon of LEDs, so one is actually happy that there is some measure of realization that it's not that easy to just come with economic development. But my question now is, how do you measure realistic LEDs? Does the creation of jobs play a role in this instance? Or is the department developing some pointers to say, now, you know, if we have this and this, then at least, it's realistic they use their natural resources or the area and so on. And then just a last question on the donor funding. Just for clarity, 15.854 million final appropriation. So that is what is in the budget. That's not donor money that came in and that you are spending. This is South African taxpayers' money that you use for this all this international and donor relations. That's slide 9, the last thing. I just want that to be unpacked a little bit. Thank you, sir.
DG, before you and your team respond, can I add my penny little worth of questions? Peter asked and Dome raised two questions that are really mine. They are not theirs. When I asked the question, the first question he raised about support the last time, you said to us that you are doing work with premiers' offices in the country and so on, DGs in the provinces, that perhaps you are under-reporting on the issue. So he has asked it again today differently, but it's the same question. In other words, the name of the department is important, and therefore, even as a committee, one of the observations we did make, at least as a new one in the committee, was an observation that perhaps we have not done work directed at provinces and their support, and not just the Department of Local Government, but provincial capacity to implement some of the issues that we're talking about. So, yes, please do that. Dorman's question on IGR. I don't believe this is a general. I know for a fact that in Northwest, for example, the Premier insists that local mayors must be present at the IGR forum, at the PCC. Because she feels this problem of district mayors coming does not always necessarily translate into effective communication with local municipalities, and therefore find it useful for them to be there. That's her view. But then she has to deal with a huge meeting. Okay. A very huge meeting. The heading that they manage. The others don't do that. And what we have picked up in our interaction with them is
where mayors do attend these intergovernmental forums, if it is mayors who attend. There isn't a great system of effective reporting, so that the presence and or absence of local municipalities in these forums at a slightly higher level is an important question. And how do we deal with those problems that arise from the poor and or bad culture of reporting? It is linked to my next point, which is naturally the attention between the three spheres. Okay? And the president called for this district growth and development strategies. Your report is that they've taken place. But it appears they took place in the absence of local municipalities themselves not having had their own versions of similar stuff. On LED, for example, not many municipalities had LEDs. When the district held their own, when district held these meetings, growth and development strategies. So what I'm thinking about is then, what is the substance of those? How were they formulated if there wasn't sufficient work done at the local level? I mean, these are just questions. I don't know whether it's too much of a detail, but it's an important detail. The other one in this area of governance is your work around leadership training program, so capacity building initiative. We interacted with the local government sector the other day. Their view, which is interesting and seductive, is that you shouldn't do that as a department. That you should let them do that, okay? And your responsibility be to oversee them. They are developing the training capacity. They are developing an ability to do that. So, just like Trevor Manuel has a neighborhood fund there, which in some of us' opinion, it shouldn't be there, it should be with you. You are also developing a training staff here. So what do you think about their view, which I generally support, that you shouldn't go into it, you should let them do it, and then oversee it? That's a question that I want to... the second question Peter asked, which I said is mine. I'll say this. I've spoken to your minister, and Minister Tokodiziza, and Minister Lulutungwan, okay, about what he calls conflict in the location or implementation of land use legislation. The DET has some stuff there, so on and so on. This is in my interaction with NGOs that operate in this sector, they are mad about planning-related issues and so on. They are asking, why is something not being done around this issue? So the land use management bill is still in limbo. And so when are we going to see something happening around this issue? Is there anything that we must do from here? Go screaming somewhere? We're just keen to understand, what is the delay? I have this unfortunate thing that I was part of the people who formulated the Development Facilitation Act as a temporary measure, and then it would be replaced. And this was in the early 90s. So we are still yet to carry out that agenda of that type. So I'm really keen to understand, where is the delay, what are the problematic areas in short. And Treasury reported money that went back to donors. Is any money that is in your forte part of that? Money that would have gone back? And can you just give us a sense of who the donors you're talking about that are dealing with programs that you're dealing with? And whether you have any, what kind of relationships are imagined there? Thanks.
Thanks, Chair and members. I'm not going to deal with all of the questions myself, if you don't mind. I think they're also other specialists, and I may not deal with them in the appropriate order, but let me start at the beginning question. I can't comment on the name of the department and why it is, I think it's probably best dealt with by the head of the department. As far as this program is concerned, there are, of course, a range of matters that weren't on the previous financial year's expenditure assessments, which are continuing business. And one of those is the program flowing from the implementation of the IDR Act that we introduced through the PCC, which was to assess the capacity of the offices of the Premier and to assist that office to develop its own strategic orientation. And that's ongoing. And with that, a program to assess the capacity of provincial departments of local government and to put in place a framework for improving capacity of provincial departments. And that we are pursuing with the Department of Public Service and Administration and others to look at sustained engagement. So there is certainly in this program a range of support measures, but I can't comment on the strategic naming of the department.
Sorry, Chair, this is the question wasn't about the name.
Yes, no, I was, no, Peter, I'm the chair of this meeting. I was going to protect you and say that. So don't, just cool your heels.
Right.
He's answered it anyway, so don't worry. No, the point, you check the point. All he's saying is, look, we would like to get information about the work you do with projects.
Oh, okay.
Because your name is provincial and local.
Yeah.
That's the reason, yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Have I answered your question?
Yeah, you have. Okay. We would like to have more, but,
I think what you'll also find, though, just, in fairness to the member's question, I think that the department as a whole has a variety of programs which in some either way impact on provinces. Obviously, one of our primary points of interest has been the intergovernmental role of provinces, obviously because we've had to implement our legislation through provinces, but also because they're our counterparts, provincial departments of local government, and with the IGR Act, the Premier is playing a particular role in respect of IGR coordination. So those have been primary strategic focal points. I don't think that we play a capacity-building role, in sort of education sectors and so on. I mean, we work with those in a variety of other ways. I'm sure that if you speak to Nelly, you'll see the sort of variety of sector engagements that happen in that context and so on. I know it's up short of answering your question, but certainly I'm not in a position to do that. But from this program's point of view, we do have those and other mechanisms. The IDP engagement program, for instance, is a form of support to provinces. As you know, IDP reviews the provincial functions under the Systems Act. The reason we believe that the ratio of adoption rates was so low is that we have had variable capacity in provinces. So we ran that as a support initiative, both for municipalities and provinces. And in the turn, we built a collective capability in the state to get 100% adoption. And that's not a target that should be lightly dismissed. It's an important achievement, and it's something that we can build on going forward. So those are some of the ways in which we, in the program, do interact. In fact, provinces are probably our largest stakeholder from that point of view. But a large measure of it is focused on the local sphere of government. As you rightly said as well, the policy review obviously is a strategic broadening of at least the inquiry into the role of provincial government in our system. The Development Facilitation Act, land use management, we also believe that land use management is a critical area for inquiry. It is not something directly under our control. There are a variety of state institutions that have regulatory responsibility in this area. Land affairs, DEET, ourselves, etc. And this may be something that we need to look at going forward, but it's not something that the department in itself can simply resolve away. What we've done in the past is working with the National Treasury, a process institute, to look at all of these conflicting pieces of legislation. It was quite a high-level process, and we've been participating in that process as one of a constituency of stakeholders. But ideally, I think legislation on land use management is desirable, and we've certainly been working with our counterparts in land affairs who are responsible for that to fast track and move that forward. Where it is now, I couldn't say. It's something that I wouldn't be able to answer. Powers and functions of kings and queens, at what stage is this process? I wouldn't have that information immediately available. I don't know whether Johan has that information, but if it does, he can respond to that question. Then Clapper Commission and its work time limits for the report. I assume that the committee's also met with the Clapper Commission. But Johan would also be in a position to appraise you of recent initiatives that we've been involved in with the commission to deal with the output of that commission, at least as far as the first phase of the process is concerned. So Johan, will you pick up on that question? Relations in IGO, cooperation between traditional councils and municipal councils, the examples of good cooperation and examples of not so good cooperation, local houses, establishment of provincial houses, and traditional councils. We agree there are examples of good cooperation, and in fact we've embarked on a process under the National Program of Support to begin to develop these benchmarks and case studies, and that process I'm sure is going to reveal many of these useful practices that do exist, and I'm sure when that work is completed, John, we will also share that with the committee. The broader area of the relationship between traditional institutions and municipal councils, this is an area we're looking at. We're undertaking our own assessment of the situation. There's a lot of anecdotal stories that go around, and it's difficult to get an accurate picture of precisely what is the nature of the problem, if there is a problem. Why does it work where it does work? And that is a process that we're going to embark on as part of enriching the program of support to the institution to look at the nature of cooperation. As I said in my presentation, this functional area, as it develops its own capabilities, given the prominence we've attached to it in the department, is going to move increasingly in the direction of development support for the institution, looking far more at the developmental role of the institution itself in respect of all other state institutions than simply on the implementation of the Act. There was a question around why is the reconstitution of councils so slow? Well, the reporting date was, of course, the previous financial year. I mean, Johan, you may well have more accurate data than that. And also the question, what have we done to push that along? Johan can also give you a sense of the kind of hands-on interaction that we do have with provinces. The transformation of these councils, particularly as far as their representativity on issues of gender, there was a concern that 50% therefore means only 50% transformed. I think, Johan, you can pick up on that issue as well. Has money gone back to donors, and who are the main donors? Chair, one of your questions. I'm not aware, the CFO may clarify, but I'm not aware that we've returned money to donors. Most of the major donor agencies are with the department, DFID, the European Union, what are some of the others called? EZ, Germans, Swedes, USA, Danida. We can give you a full list of the donor agencies. Yeah, I don't think we've not returned any of their money as far as I'm aware. The 15.84 million donor funding, taxpayers' money, is it in addition to donor funding? It's not donor funding. It's money that we are utilizing for this area, and this area is a growing area of work for our department, given the governance responsibilities that emerge. So, amongst other things, what we're dealing with, which is not part of the estimates of expenditure report, is we are working on a framework for provincial and municipal international relations. We're aware that there's a whole range of practices that have evolved. There is a policy which was adopted in 1998, We are reassessing that situation with the DFA and other parties, and we're working towards establishing a framework for provincial and international relations. And it would also go on donor salary, on not donor salaries, on staff salaries and so on. The budget appears to be inconsistent. That's a mistake. The 5 should be an 8. What we had, as I said, overexpenditure in the program, which was marginal, so it wouldn't have been asymmetrical, but when they do the final reconciliation for the department, you know, these things presumably even out. 17 experts deployed to municipalities. What about the others? How do we guarantee that there is local government, local economic development effectiveness in this area? It would be impossible to guarantee local economic development effectiveness because we simply don't have all the levers of control in our power. How we arrived at that number was as part of the process over the last 3 years to assess the credibility of IEP, which naturally looked at LED as well. We identified a set of municipalities based on that credibility framework, which, as I said, was developed in consultation with other state institutions and provinces. And based on that assessment, we determined that certain municipalities were in need of direct support, and these are the municipalities that are in need of direct support. Tensions between flowing from that, CETA should do capacity building, DPLG should oversee. I don't think that's something that I'm in an appropriate position to comment on, Chair. Tensions between spheres, GDSs, took place in the absence of local LEGs. What is the substance of LEGs? I think we're still in the process of assessing the substance. I mean, there's an enormous body of material. Most of the district and metropolitan LED summits would not have taken place in a vacuum. They would have taken place on the back of planning processes within those municipalities that have been there since the inception of the legislation. Given the scale of this kind of exercise, the first phase was to have these GDS summits to get business and other sectors and municipalities into one dialogue around the development of those particular areas. So we would be, we've got assessments that are not quite where we want them to be in terms of the content, and much of the material around the GDS we will look at in building our strategy for implementing the framework going forward. So I'm not in a position to give you a sense of the substance. They probably do vary in pretty much the same way that the IDPs vary when we look at the credibility. And we would then use that as a benchmark and move forward and hopefully get credible LED strategies in all of our municipalities. There are, of course, questions around what scale you do LED on. I think my co-presenter in the other program did raise this. I mean, is it realistic to have LED strategies in every municipality? Perhaps it's something that we need to look at. Do you do it on a larger scale? How does it tie in with regional economic development, et cetera, et cetera? These would be the kind of issues that we'd need to look at in the policy review in particular. IGR, it was the issue raised about the involvement of locals and districts, and it picked up on something which was in the report around the involvement of the number of districts. The establishment of district forums is not translated into regular meetings. I simply reported what has come out there of the committee's own report. That's not a conclusion that we've drawn. And we've then indicated how we've tried to deal with that particular matter. There is clearly a practice in some provinces where locals do participate in the Premier's forums. The members will recall that in the Act, we did not preclude that possibility. We just simply didn't prescribe it as mandatory. So the Framework Act was enabling of that situation and pretty much left it to the province to determine their own practical arrangement. Of course, the efficacy of the system is of concern to us, and we're hoping that with the introduction of the toolkit, as well as with the development of a framework for monitoring the intergovernmental system in our country, i.e. trying to measure cooperative governance, we would be able to get a better understanding of where some of the problems are and why things are not working. We simply do not have the capacity to administer the entire state machinery in detail in every instance where problems may arise. So what we do is we set benchmarks and targets, we move towards those, enable, facilitate, build relationships, try as far as possible to correct particular problems. And those toolkits that we publish certainly do give a very comprehensive how-to manual for various aspects of the intergovernmental system. The question about municipalities and how did we arrive, why did we talk about credibility to begin with, and municipalities towing the line, I think it isn't simply a question of compliance. There were issues of capacity, but the real problem that we addressed were there were repeated, continual, anecdotal statements that IDPs are just wish lists. And this had a negative impact on the status and orientation of the municipal planning system within the intergovernmental system, which we had legislated and given importance. And for that reason, we set out to determine just exactly how credible these IDPs are. And the results were fairly surprising that, and we can, you know, at a later stage, give you additional information on credibility, but it's certainly not the stark picture that people are painting. There is, not in every respect, but there's certainly a large body of IDPs that are more than credible and are increasing in their utility. This is not a zero-sum game that's going to be achieved overnight, but certainly the start for us was to put in place a process of engagement and to steadily push back the boundaries of poor IDPs, support those municipalities that were weak, and increasingly focus on actual expenditure in alignment with the budget, which is something that my colleague also alluded to, so that we can see how these material plans are being translated into a measurable difference in people's lives. And that's ultimately where we will take this program going forward. There was an issue around the capacity of the department to be self-sustaining. I'm sorry, I didn't really catch the main point. I'm not sure whether it was directed to me or perhaps to the department as a whole. We don't have a static organogram, and we will continually review the organogram for this particular program. You may have been referring, Honourable Member, to the point I made about the building the capacity for the program to take into account the policy review process. Yes, that is something that we're looking at, and we did make certain proposals which are still, which are in the approval phase. Honourable Member's question about the locals, I think I've addressed that. It was just a quote from the report. The realistic LED, I think I've addressed this also. Again, just to say that the quote realistic LED was just a reference again to the report of the committee and how we'll address that. The important point, again, I think, about the alignment process, yes, it's an issue. It's an issue that's different in different sectors. It's an issue that is a manifestation of the very complex system of intergovernmental relations that we have. It's an extremely complex system by any standard. And cooperative governance in itself is not something that is easily measured or can be legislated. It is about human behavior. It's about building practice and culture, putting institutions in place, building practice around those institutions, assessing and moving forward, and it's going to take time. Now we have seen that through the IDP engagement processes, in particular through the master sector plan, these are all initiatives which the department has undertaken to assist sectors and municipalities where there is a problem of connect-up. But it's also important that we don't generalize the problem. There are very many examples of very good connectivity between sectors. There are a number of departments that in fact created capacity spatially to support sectors, and there are examples of those departments. So through the policy review, this will be another opportunity for us to see whether we've got the system correctly balanced. How do issues such as, for instance, the land use management complexity that's been referred to. How does that impact on relations between the three spheres of government? Because you've got different centers of decision-making authority in relation to decision-making. But there's probably a broader question at stake, and it's something that we're going to have to think through a bit more carefully. We designed a municipal IDP as a municipal plan for functions that municipalities have control over. But much of the investment in municipal areas is the preserve of other spheres of government and institutions, which have their own strategic planning process. And we've said that the municipal IDP must also talk to those issues. So, for instance, housing is a provincial function, but settlement planning is a municipal function. Land use administration is a national function. It's an extraordinarily complex environment for municipalities to be both the coordinator of all intergovernmental activity in their area and be a planner of their own functions. And it's something that I think possibly we can only look at in a very clustered way, both at national level, provincial level, but also perhaps even at the parliamentary level, to bring the various sector departments to discuss this program of alignment 20. I think those are most of the issues. I think there were some issues around the capacity to do local economic development, which I think we've addressed. Obviously, it's something that's ongoing, and Project Consolidate to some extent is an assistance there. We will certainly do that. We will identify all relevant areas of the implementation of the traditional leadership legislation. We can, at a subsequent stage, deal in more detail with the implementation of that. The establishment, I think, finally, was the only two provinces have established houses of traditional leadership. How does it correspond? I think we were talking about the establishment of traditional councils. I think I'm not certain what the house was reporting on, but I'm sure we can give you information about the establishment of provincial houses. And the role of the ward committee point, I would need more information to be able to respond to that, but certainly I wouldn't be in the best position to deal with that. As I did say, the issue of the relationship between institutions of traditional leadership and local government is an issue that we're looking at both in terms of case studies, but also in terms of looking at the specifics of that relationship and how it is working in practice. And that's ongoing work, part of our national program of support. We're not yet at a point where we can say definitively there what is the nature of the problem should there be. I think I've dealt with all of those except for the ones that I just asked Johan to pick up on, Chair.
Thank you, the issue regarding the regulation of kings and queens, as you are aware, the Traditional Leadership, Governance and Framework Act provides that the President may issue regulations identifying the roles and functions of kings and queens. The Department did draft regulations, consulted on these regulations, and they have considered all the inputs that they've received. These regulations are now finalized and will soon be submitted to the President for his consideration and publication in the Government Gazette. The Inkapo Commission, as you are aware, the Framework Act requires that the Inkapo Commission must first of all investigate all existing and recognized paramounties to see whether they qualify to be recognized as kings and queens and kingships. The Commission has finalized this work. They have investigated the existing 12 kingships. They have finalized their report. They have also investigated a number of new claims to kingships. The Commission has indicated that by the end of this year, they will convey their determinations on the 12 existing kingships to the President. The Department also had a workshop together with the Commission to plan the number of claims and disputes that the Commission has received to see in how they can change the modus operandi to speed up the process and to be, for it to be possible to stay within the time frame of 5 years. That process has been done, and the work plan has been finalized in this regard. Coming to the issue of traditional councils and local houses, just to say, the former tribal authorities, there were plus minus 800 tribal authorities that had been that had to be reconstituted into traditional councils. Of the latest figures that we have now is of the 800 traditional councils, 520 have been reconstituted now. Still 280 must be reconstituted. It's the provinces, I don't know whether Limpopo and Mpumalanga in the main, that must do the reconstitution. They actually were faced with a number of challenges. You know that the Framework Act also requires that before you can reconstitute a traditional council, you also must be in a position to define the area of jurisdiction of that specific council. So this is one, the area of jurisdiction, one of the challenges that the provinces will face, how to finalize the country, delay the reconstitution. The other thing is that a number of traditional councils, also the subordinates of the traditional communities, stayed intermingled, and they had to negotiate with the different communities on boundaries between them. So that was another delaying factor in the reconstitution of the councils. But the affected provinces have indicated that early next year, all the councils will be reconstituted. Coming to local houses, already 21 local houses of the 30 local houses have been established. The two provinces still have to finalize the legislation dealing with the establishment of local houses. These pieces of legislation are in the final stages of being finalized, and also these houses will be, all indications are that in the coming year, the coming financial year, all the local houses will be finalized. Also, provinces like the Northern Cape and Gauteng received traditional leaders after the redetermination of provincial boundaries. So Northern Cape also and Gauteng are finalizing their legislation. As soon as that has happened, the local houses will be established. Their traditional councils have been reconstituted by the other provinces before they received them. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'll ask you a question.
What African language do you speak?
I can speak all two languages. Yeah. You know, when someone speaks like English, it's an African language, it changes the way they speak. I want you to check a bit.
Thank you. So you want to follow up then?
That's one broad question which I believe will find its place in the review process. Chairperson, without defending municipality, I think there is something that is worrying us. This general assumption that municipalities are the ones that are failing, without people saying something about national and provincial. I'm raising this because we when you go through DPSA,
you've made that point.
You'll identify these inefficiencies and this devolution of things. And I'm not defending them stupidly, but I'm saying there is a big challenge.
Okay. You are right. That must be addressed explicitly. But in the questions on the policy process on provinces, that point is explicitly made, that the implications of what is underway may affect both national, provincial, and local. So I think it's a matter that when we reflect on those issues, must contribute ideas as well. Yeah, but thanks for raising it. Honorable members, I want us to move to the next presentation. There are questions that remain. To throw it up in the air, how do you treat sustainable livelihoods? Are you treating it as you, are you, is it an assumption that when you deal with LED, you deal with sustainable livelihood? Or does it require separate, different treatment? Are there measures to work with that issue? I mean, I just want to get a sense of that. The other I'll raise maybe at the end, and there are actually very specific things that I would like to make statements on, but they are based on what we have discussed so far. But for now, let's go to the notes presentation. And I just want, today we are asking the President, because he is the one who identified on behalf of the country the notes, whether
our original intention was to learn from this on how government should work together, whether we have learned, and what is the process of that having learned. If we have, how are we ensuring it is replicated across the country? So that's the first question that, Nelly, before the president answers it, you should answer it here. Okay, that seems to be DPLG has given you the task, so please give us a response. The question that we have, that I have also, is the IDT has been part of this program from long time ago. What is the quality of their support? Their support as the IDT as an agency, but also are you satisfied with the quality of the people they contract to do the work where they do not have that capacity? Do you have any views around that? In our interaction with the demarcation board, we have always raised the concern in our interaction with other departments about the finalization of the alignment of service delivery boundaries with municipal boundaries. So they identified the SAPS, which you have here, and the Department of Justice, that there is work between those two departments and the MDB that is going on. Are you playing any role to get them to get up where their staff and so on? And if so, DG, what kind of relationship are you having on that question? Essentially, to comply with the Demarcation Act, that they must align their boundaries with what came after that year. And the 11 out of 18 rural nodes have MPCCs. Ma'am, this is obviously a very important progress, but what we always worry about is the quality of those that exist and their functionality. Do you have any views around that? Any feedback, your monitoring and evaluation? Is it saying that many of them are operating optimally, or are they challenging? You in slide number 10, you referred to the high staff turnover. We went to Maludia Pofung in the Free State, and the municipal manager who was present in that meeting did not make any comment, any perspective. I can say this here. We were told he's on his way and he's already out. We were the fourth municipal manager who left that place. So one of the questions that we are, and this is serious stuff. So how frequent, when you say high turnover, is it in all of the nodes or specific ones? Maybe it's because there are specific problems in Maludia Pofung, and therefore you have high turnover and so on. And let's say the first fraud from the copper. So Vietnam of the virus, Maludia Pofung of Ni, and any other place elsewhere. Please say a word or two about that. Okay. Both in the, I want to draw this linkage, I'm asking you, in the policy research and so on, and here, I haven't seen reference to the consolidated municipal transformation program. Where do you locate it? You'll notice when you answer it, I have very specific interest in it, elements of it in which this work that we are doing. I would like to hear, where do you report it? Where is it located? I don't remember seeing it when I was going through, please. Okay, it may not all be response and so on. Peter, you want to follow up? Yes, Chief, and who else? Ndatem Shululu?
Yeah.
Domen?
Yeah, I don't want to follow up with the last question. Just three, actually. The first one is again, if one goes to the program purposes to manage, coordinate, monitor, and measure the effectiveness of these programs. What are your conclusions regarding measuring the effectiveness? And what is your measure of effectiveness? Because one of the problems one has is to distinguish performance of municipality inside the program and what it might have done had it been outside the program. How do you ascribe successful failure to the program as opposed to what the municipality is doing in its own court? Secondly, I have this system because I need an answer. Secondly, Chair, if one has regard to, we did a tour last year, we visited some of these nodes, and one of the questions that arose was the differential performance of these. And the question I have is, what are you doing in respect of, and sorry.
The question is made in Alexandria as a good example. How is the lesson of Alexandria being taken forward throughout the week and month? How do you actually institutionalize best practice? I know you've got some examples, the workshops, the digital champions, this and that. But is it working? Basically, are you able to take best practice, take it to the weaker places, and are they buying into it and changing their behavior? And finally, just a question on budget, I don't understand. The budget was $8.5 million, got up to 11, and those are subscribed to doubling the management budget.
Presenting to us today would be able to indicate that from the time they reported to us on urban renewal program, for instance, able to indicate to us that there is some movement, characterized slightly better, or is moving slightly better, Khalishiwe, etc., as well as all those other points that were identified by the President's chair.
Yes. Yes,
some evaluation, so that at least we know that really we're moving towards better than the life of other people. Similarly, in rural areas, particularly because we picked up, as I indicated, when we called the district municipality to account to us, that the cholera and all those sorts of things, partly because there's lack of infrastructure, and there was commitment then that at least we'll move towards that direction. And therefore, this branch would, in my view, would better be in a position to inform us that at least there is a movement really to better the lives of those people who are living in rural areas around this world. Many of them, we are unable to deliver even free drinking water as we speak, free electricity as we speak, etc., etc. Last week, of course, I was in Matatiel, in Mangresha, over the weekend. And the road that was better then, it is not so better now. You see, the other area where there was electricity then, it is no more there now. Something like that. So those are the things that we would like this department to inform us fully, so that at least if there are any challenges around that, we can actually play our role as public representatives. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, since I'm not a communist or a socialist, but believe in the free market, I want to highlight something about the business trust. No, I'm not contrasting with you. I'm just saying why I asked this question. I learned with that conference in Boksburg, actually a wonderful thing of these business people that they, every company that is listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange must contribute, I think, 0.05% of their turnover. And so they have a lot of money available, and they told me, the directors there, that everyone is paying. They're not, nobody that signed an agreement has withdrawn. So my question is just, you link their support with the economic development profiles that were completed and so on. Now, so I just want to get a sense, what are they doing for you? Can the department spend all the money that they make available for programs? And what was the that conference? Did they sponsor that conference totally? Thank you.
Can you report verification of the claim that they all do pay?
He's a representative of business interest. You can hear. Go ahead.
No, Chair, I would have just contributed that also from the arriving from the Presidential Job Summit, I was also one of those signatories for the establishment of Umsobo. That laid the foundation also to that direction. Chairperson, yes, that's one addition. I would believe that MPCC are Tusong, and I'll call Tusong, am I right?
Tusong Center.
Center,
yes. Yeah, you see, the department is rather outdated, but
okay.
That's fine.
Yeah. Chairperson, this issue of monitoring and evaluation, we are aware that we will keep on touching on it. But as it relates to this slide, slides 4 and 6, we also note that it is a challenge to get these other departments, more so in terms of medium-term expenditure framework commitments to the new. What one has got evidence on is the challenge that the department is facing in terms of the key strategic managers attending these meetings. usually you'll find politicians attending and then or junior managers, but the high staff, those that are taking decisions, not attending. The other one, Chairperson, is on the NDA. I'm just also adding because I was in this commission. I think there was a complaint about the NDA not being accessible, and that was, I think, in the Northern Province. But what came out last week, I think there was an interview, and I'm not speaking for NDA here, but it's a challenge, that NDA was crying out loud that the resources they have are not enough. I just want to hear from you in terms of NDA having resources or not having resources, because that's important. The last one, Chairperson, is the... No, I think you may have to thank it.
Who's on that?
To your left. You're supposed to know this story. What's your story?
Yeah, mine is also on the rural development. I just want to check whether I can understand that for development in the rural area, given the urban and rural divide, there must be infrastructural development, because as we all know, the CEOs of this world will never work in the rural area, where if they want to use the glue, they must go behind the trees. They'll never be affected. If they want to water, they must go to the river and fetch water from. They will never be affected. So, indeed, infrastructure is basic. But what I want to know, you know, during apartheid, at least there was, well, for wrong reasons, for political reasons, but at least there was a specific strategy of those that they called border industries, where Arambu, Kutazana, there was intention to attract industry with incentives to develop and so on, in the war and all over the show. I just want to know if we do have a strategy to attract business to go to the rural areas. I mean, take for example, as citrus fruit, all of them must come to Johannesburg to be changed as peanut butter or whatever. Is it not possible that, especially for agriculture, those mines that are there in the rural areas, we could start looking at possibilities of beneficiation right in the rural areas, which will relieve the influx of people from all rural areas to the urban area, which is a big burden here in the urban area. I'm just saying, is it a business strategy for rural business development?
Oh, one time. Okay. All right. Okay, sure. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah.
My question is actually related on slide number 5, achievement. In fact, yeah, I'm looking at this first item here. It said that there was an induction workshop held in Rarushiwi. And it is indicating some municipalities here, coming from Sikukuni as part of my constituency. I don't see Sikukuni or other districts being included here. So I'm wondering as to whether this program or this work induction workshop was not so very much important to other district municipalities, because I think it was in related to ISRDP and URP. So my question would be, why other district municipalities, new councillors, were not there? Why? What's happening? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I may not be able to respond to all.
Your leader wants to speak before you first. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chair. No, I thought I should come in since, as you know, Nelly is our new DDT, and some of the questions also are questions to the department as a whole. So I thought that it would be important to just indicate some issues as well, and they still continue to follow up in this form. You will see that this program on urban and rural development is actually a program that we are starting to focus on. Initially, it was actually a sub-program, a very small unit within government. So we took it out and established it as a new branch on its own. And we've been focusing now on establishing this branch in order to do all the things that we said we want to do in terms of the objectives. Now, can I just, as I'm going to address that the questions related to this particular branch, just confirm our approach in terms of the work that we've done in the last year as far as this program. First, we have sought to develop frameworks that are going to assist national government. So when Honorable Shukri says national government needs, we need to have interventions, we actually develop those master sector guidelines so that they can guide the national department. Even with regard to this program, we developed a guideline related to financial protocols, how national departments, how sector departments should seek to intervene and support a developed program for those local areas. So our responsibility as a small department as we are, because I do want to identify the boundaries within which we operate as a department, because we cannot do everything, is to just, to, in the first instance, develop those guidelines to those national departments. So master sector guidelines in respect to this, developed the financial protocols, tried to even start to run orientation program for national government to understand what the program was about, because we would like you to appreciate the fact that even when we started off, not all of the national departments and provincial departments could appreciate the need to work together with municipalities in those local spaces. So we had to do that in the first instance. So framework. Secondly, what we then did was to develop an ICR framework with tools. So in the last year, we developed intergovernmental relations tools that seek to help us in terms of these protocols in these areas. Once again, we were trying to ensure that we enable these different spheres of government as they work there to have something, the how-to, instead of just talking about framework, but now, how can you do this? And from the experiences of the URP program, We saw that it was not easy to get the three spheres to work together in those spheres. We actually need to write in detail the input indicators that we're talking about, what the three spheres must agree upon when they work in one area. This continues, and I must confess, this continues to be a difficult area of work in the governmental areas in local spaces where you are looking at integration. And that is why we are focusing on establishing this branch, so that we can look at the lessons for integration. We then decided that it was not enough to have this guideline. Let us also have a second element of capacity and support. But, Honorable Speaker, we couldn't provide support in all of the 283 municipalities. So we divided the municipalities and we said, here are a metro. We are going to have particular support to metros or the nodes and the districts and so forth. So you find that the numbers that we reflect upon in our report, annual report throughout, will not always deal with individual support from the department to each and every municipality. We have to deal with capacity building programs in an asymmetrical manner. So that is why that you will find that we are not dealing with each and every municipality. So you might not see your village representative in our workshop every time. But we are trying to make sure that at least we identify a program that of support in those targeted areas. Even with regard to traditional leadership, we found that having started the intergovernmental relations implementation, the work that must be done there, we have found that we actually need to engage in a much more extensive support program. And we cannot do it alone with the GPLG. We have to get the national sector department to work with the GPLG in support. And we cannot stand here today and say we have finished that job. We haven't. This is something that we still have to do. We agree with the point raised by Mr. Dukesan. In fact, towards the end of his input, he was actually starting to articulate what we want to do with regard to rural development. Because he said that the past programs, although for different reasons, had some, they were targeted for rural development, but there were some programs looking at rural development. But what we have recognized is that the program for rural development must ensure that we do not create false economies in those areas. They must be better sustainable. So this is why I want to go then to this point about the development nodes and what we sought to learn from, because we've got rural areas which on the surface seem not to have economic potential. But how can we attract industry to those areas? What we have learned from this program is that with regard to economic development, we must first draft and develop their profiles so that we can invite business, so that business can be able to come into those rural areas, even though they have been recognized as areas that would not have potential, but also have the public sector investing in basic infrastructure. And so the current program in the urban and rural development area is to make sure that we intervene as government by ensuring that there's basic infrastructure in terms of roads, in terms of water, bus services, and so on. And then in addition to that, ensure that we can invite industry. That is why then the interventions we have to get and partnerships we have with the business trust. I'm just thinking about your comment about where you stand in terms of your economic ideas, but I can't go into that. All I can say is that we work together in partnership in order to have a social commitment in the upliftment of those areas. But we are not, we certainly again, we're still very early in this program. You're asking us what have we learned in the urban regional program. What we have learned is that firstly, it is important that we establish institutional frameworks the way we are going to work. That's what was done. But we think that we have now moved beyond establishing the institutional framework. You know, we even had to have champions for the ISRP and URP program. Why? Because there was a recognition that we're actually going to need people who are going to champion and lead this program. There was a recognition that for the 3 years to work together, you have to make sure that there's some leadership and championing of the program, which recognize the nature of the problem. But now that we are starting to look at the policy environment for intergovernmental relations and the tools that I referred to, we do hope that we will move a step further, because in the past year, we have increased the consciousness publicly and in those local institutions of the need to work together. We think that at this stage, we cannot talk now to a councillor or a national department and talk to those structures in the way that they would have thought before about their individual capacity in far as service delivery. Now people appreciate the need to work together collectively. We have to do that. It's a qualitative indicator. Honorable members have asked about indicators. It is a qualitative indicator. It's not going to be about numbers 1 to 2. So that is what we have done, institutional arrangement. Another indicator that we have looked at is service delivery. We have increased the provision of water, electricity, and so on in some areas, not all of them. Today, we did not give you these numbers. In a previous assessment for the previous financial year, we did. And I'm hoping that because we are doing an overview today of each and every program, we will be given an opportunity when we do the details of each of the programs throughout the year to come with those details in terms of the outcomes, because they are there, and they are even confirmed by the recent community survey of SSA in cases where they progress. There are cases where we have had registered limited progress. In many cases, this is about the insufficient level of bus infrastructure, especially as far as water in rural areas, as far as electricity in rural areas, as also as far as our minimum planning with regard to rural road infrastructure in rural areas. And that is why the Department of Transport National has developed a master sector plan with regard just to road infrastructure, both in urban and rural areas, because there's a recognition that we must not only talk about road infrastructure in terms of 2010 urban infrastructure, we must also talk about those rural areas. So that being said, you will ask us about what else has been done. We've also looked at ENCA projects in the past year, and please, that we've reported on this, and we can come back to list the different projects that we have referred to as ENCA projects in the different areas. But it is very clear that for us to have a sustainable program, we have to balance both the social, the environmental, and the economic elements of development in these areas. We are going to write up a mid-term report on the URP program. We are going to make certain proposals now which recognize where we are in terms of these areas. The extent to which there can be left, there are lessons for integration. Some of these lessons are going to be incorporated in the white paper process and the review process, but some of the lessons will be made in public, working with you, honorable members, in terms of our discussions, further discussions in terms of what we are finding in those areas. What we have seen is that some people now come to us and request that they would like to be their institutions to be added as nodes, or they'd like their institutions to be added as institutions that should fall under project consolidation. We do not think that is the way to go, because those lessons should help us to extend the mainstreaming of the work of government. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Nelly?
Thank you, DG. I think DG has covered most of the questions, and I'm relieved about that. I was worried about questions arising for a year that I wasn't present at. But thank you, DG, for the input. Just one or two things that I may add. I think the DG has indicated that there is a process underway to look at a mid-term review, and that's where we intend to critically analyze the impact that this program has had. We are hoping through the annual reporting process that in the end that will give us a consolidated view on how we have performed since the establishment of the program. In terms of a question was asked about the high staff turnover rate. Again, this is something that we are directing to the review to help us get a sense of, is it happening in all areas, and if it does happen, what are the kind of comparative issues? One might need to understand some trends as to why people leave certain areas and what could be the underlying root causes of the changes in terms of capacity areas. We have noted them in some of the project areas specifically, not so much on the municipal level, but just at the project level where you find you have to invest new people, you know, almost too often to get any progress by way of achieving the desired impact. In terms of using lessons learned, for example, Alexander was mentioned, we are getting a sense that there are quite some useful lessons coming up, but it's a bit premature for us to confidently march out and tell everybody, use this model because it's worked for certain places. So we need to analyze the impact of all the various nodes, and the hope is that in the consolidated view, we could be able to give a much more substantive guideline, what is happening in rural areas, what has happened with the IGR processes. One thing that is almost clear is that in order to attract private sector into any specific area, be it rural or urban, they also have a sense of confidence about the government's commitment in those areas, and therefore issues about infrastructure investment, bulk, water or roads, is kind of a fast indicator of commitment in certain areas, and business gets assurance on the basis that there are certain basic things that are in place. And I think that's one lesson that is coming through. So that notion about crowding in investment and how we use that
One doesn't want to extend it too far, but it's something that you can learn from. The question to ask is a strategic investment. The issue that is being raised about prior initiatives in supporting either rural areas by way of trying to boost the economy. There are some processes that you can put elements in place to try and boost, but there are some others that you have to really be clear about the objective of why you're investing in certain localities. So I think we need to understand that much more critically before we make substantive views about ways to go and deal with them. But the hope is that through this review process, we would be able to have a clearer direction for other areas that have the same challenges as those that have been reflected in the poverty notes, which is what the program was all about. In terms of, I think the input and output, I'm not clear about the question, but it could be two related. One, in that in the presentation, we're not saying what we set as targets. And I think that information is also available, and we could share that with the committee to give much more clarity on the performance in terms of set targets and how the program has delivered. So we can avail that information. By way of, the question was raised about business trust and if within the business trust partnership, if we are utilizing, you know, the allocations that they may have from their own CSRI budget. Business trust, as you know, is a collection of other businesses, and the program that they're working with us under is the community investment program. There are other programs that they're also supporting. I think one of them is the extended public works program that they're also engaging in. In this community investment program, clearly at this stage, their basis was to support the work that local government is doing in trying to improve kind of the workings of communities or the workings of business conditions in those areas. And they are seeking to be directed by us in ways that we can better utilize that those funding. So the clearer our processes become, the much more accessible we might be able to propose support mechanisms to them. And with regards to the conference, yes, they supported the entire budget of the conference proceedings, including the development of economic profiles themselves. And obviously, there were DPLG staff who were working quite closely in that process of identifying and coordinating the process of managing the economic profiling project itself. I won't be able to respond to the two consensus, but we can avail the information back to the portfolio committee. In terms of budget allocation, that's something also that I would like to defer and be able to get back to the committee with regards to how the decisions were made. Chair, I may have omitted others in terms of response, but I think I've noted them down and we could have a proper briefing back to the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Keep thinking, in case we, you remember, raise it, we will also remind you. Members, we are not doing well on time. Partly because I think the drafters of the agenda underestimate or overestimate my ability to keep Honorable Nkosi Nongonyana, Mshududu, and Peter Smith to ask one question. I don't have that capacity. So you are really asking too much of me. So you are underestimating what we are going to spend. We are supposed to be dealing with systems from 12 o'clock onwards. So in future, I also felt unable to repress my own questions that I have in honor of the time we would like to spend on the variety of the issues. I do think that we need quality time on these areas and so on. It's not also okay to spend too little time on this issue. There are substantial issues that we have to raise, and so it will affect us negatively if we also want to take, we fly over these issues, you know. Helicopter flying over are useful only during disaster. But ordinarily we must spend more time on issues and so on. So that's my concern. It's 22-1. Elroy, we are going to ask you to present
and let's see how we proceed with that one.
Thank you, Jefferson. Good morning, members. The presentation is similar to my colleague before me, so I think the outline on page 2, slide 2, is in that common format. In terms of slide number 4, there are a number of components that you'll be reporting on. Chairperson, I also find myself in a somewhat similar position to my colleague Nelly in that I was not directly responsible for this area in the UA question, but obviously I'm quite close to the work and I'm currently responsible for the
you inherit things, you inherit both liabilities and assets. You don't only inherit assets, you see.
And it normally says that some of us get paid to deal with the difficult things. So if I can jump straight maybe let me just say that the kind of overriding objectives of this particular program or branch, it really focuses on matters of capacity building, hands-on support project consolidates also here, it focuses on intergovernmental fiscal relations, and it also focuses on key matters pertaining to the institutional and administrative environment with regard to local government. So if you see that slide there, sorry, I'm still on slide number 4, just to give the overview. You'll see then it touches on all of those different components, and I've just indicated some of the key managers that are leading us in this branch. We have one particular vacancy in the second area, the performance management at the level of the chief director. And also we're trying to put some capacity in place at point number 8. That the person there is an advisor to the department that is assisting us. Now, if I can then just quickly go straight to each of these areas and give some high-level feedback. In respect of intergovernmental fiscal relations, here we have managed local government equitable share in the question, 18 billion rand, yes, not million, billion rand has been managed and transferred that to all municipalities. We've also managed the municipal systems improvement grants, 200 million rand, transferred all of those funds. The one grant obviously is an unconditional grant, and the second grant, 2 million, is a conditional grant. We've also continued our implementation, phase implementation of the Property Rates Act that was put in place in 2004. We've published the first set of regulations in that regard, and these were really very elementary regulations dealing with first order things, such as how you go about preparing a evaluation role. Amongst other things. We also put a support program in place to try and assist those municipalities that felt they were ready to start implementing this. And then a link, but slightly different to the area of property rates, we also put a general financial management support program in place to support municipalities with, amongst other things, the preparation of the annual financial statement. And then, of course, still in this area, we continue to do background research and work on the local government equitable share, in particular a component known as the development component. This is work that ultimately treasury will sign off on, but we see ourselves as playing a key role in preparing proposals in that regard. In the area of performance management, we think we had a fairly successful performance excellence awards in 2006, otherwise known as the Vuno Awards. And then also we concluded an audit of performance management systems that are currently in place in municipalities. That work was concluded. Then going to slide number 7, in the area of local government administrative systems, again, very importantly, we also published the performance management regulations. Again, these regulations have been important for a number of reasons. They spell out very clearly what is expected in respect of employment contracts, performance management agreements, and how we expect basic reporting to take place. We also published the upper limits for councillor remuneration. And then also point number C, we worked quite extensively on local government laws amendment bill in the course of last year. Obviously, this committee processed this bill very recently, and it has gone through the National Assembly. We also continue to work very closely, or in the last year we worked very closely and continue to work closely with the Department of Public Service Administration on the single public service set of proposals, including the draft legislation there. Then in regard to the Municipal Leadership Development Program, what I did not say yet, when we had the elections in 2006, we rolled out very soon after that, together with SAUGA, a orientation and induction program for all councillors, and over 90% of our 9,000 councillors participated in that orientation and induction program. Following that, then we rolled out the pilot Municipal Leadership Development Program, and as you can see there, we piloted this in about 14 districts, and over 200 councillors and senior officials benefited from this. We also published some competency guidelines for our Section 57 management employees as part of the performance regulations that I referred to earlier. Next slide, in the area of local government anti-corruption, very importantly, last year we published and circulated a local government anti-corruption strategy. This strategy we think is quite important in that one of the things that it attempted to do was to spell out clear roles and responsibilities for national government provinces and also with respect to individual municipalities, what they should focus on. And then, of course, we started implementation in a limited number of municipalities. With regard to matters of equity and development in local government, we have done a number of things. The one thing that we've done was to, again, publish a local government HIV and AIDS framework. And again, I must emphasize that this particular framework, we think, was quite an important contribution in our fight against HIV and AIDS, in the sense that we really focused on what we call the governance and development priorities pertaining to HIV and AIDS, as opposed to the so-called biomedical priorities pertaining to HIV and AIDS. We also developed a draft local government gender framework. We hosted a successful Women in Local Government conference. And then also members will be aware that our Deputy Minister is the national champion for the 16 days of activism of no violence against women and children. Last year, the 25th of November to the 10th of December, we had quite a successful focus on this particular campaign. We also developed a concept paper for youth development, and we're working very closely with the presidency in that regard. Slide number 9, coming to Project Consolidate. There are a number of things that we did in the year in question with regard to Project Consolidate. Here we simply reporting at the highest level some of the major outcomes. We managed to mobilize and deploy at least 281 professionals. We managed to place them for varying periods of time in about 85 Project Consolidate municipalities. And there have been a number of benefits and advantages associated with that, and you can see those listed there, A to E. They include augmenting capacity in various areas, dealing with very specific service delivery problems, and we've got many case studies that point to this. We also worked in the area of local economic development, and then also lastly, through this process, we've managed to enter into very structured relationships with a number of very important stakeholders and partners outside of government. Also, as part of Project Consolidate, we supported the Presidential Municipal Izambizo Program. We had about 12 Izambizo in the course of last year. I can immediately say now one of the challenges in this area continues to be the issue of follow-up in respect of the key decisions that have been taken in matters raised at these Izambizo. Again, as part of Project Consolidate, a key priority has been to manage and implement, if you like, the so-called successor to Project Consolidate, which is the 5-year local government strategic agenda. So there's been a specific focus in ensuring that all provinces are working in line with those priorities. Chairperson, then the last slide in terms of the high-level overview, slide number 10. We worked on updating the National Capacity Building Framework. This has been quite a difficult task because this area of capacity building is quite complex and already has come up early in the discussion. We also worked with SAUGA in conducting a kind of a peer review process. At least one or two district municipalities have benefited from that particular process. In respect of 2010, again, we have put a particular component in place to focus on matters of 2010 and support that we can provide to local government. Our minister chairs a forum known as the Host Cities Forum. We provide executive, secretarial, and administrative support to the minister in that regard. And then also what we have done was to prepare a draft implementation plan for the department, and already we are working in that regard. Chairperson, now moving on to the budget, I think in the interest of time, I'm going to leave that to my colleague, who will deal with this in detail later this afternoon. Going to the branch priorities, again, I think these are self-explanatory, and again, some of these issues have come up. You know, we work very closely in many of these programs that I've mentioned. We work with provinces, and maybe I should also just take the liberty here to say, Chairperson, in the end question, you know, we had a specific focus on project consolidation, and one of the very deliberate areas of attention of project consolidation was to work with and strengthen the capability of every single province to manage and roll out project consolidation. And we've got a separate, you know, kind of report that kind of speaks to that, but it completely complements what my earlier colleagues have said in respect of the analysis that we've done of provinces' capability. Chairperson, the next couple of slides, and I'll be very quick from slide 15 onwards, because literally now all of these priorities are areas that I've covered in my previous set of slides, and I'll literally just hint at some of the kind of progress that we're making already in the course of 2007. So if we look at slide 15, for example, if we look at the Municipal Property Rates Act and the work that, ongoing work they're doing there, again, we can report, you know, by the middle of by September, roughly, already 23 municipalities have started to implement this particular act in terms of the regulations. We continue to support at least 120 municipalities in respect of annual financial statements, and also we're doing some work in trying to understand the borrowing environment and the municipal viability, the extent to which municipalities are financially self-sustainable. We continue to do work on local government benchmarks, and our planning is quite advanced with respect to the 2007 Vuna Awards. The next slide, local government administrative systems. We are working very closely with Treasury in respect of how we can deal with this ongoing challenge of capacity, especially within rural areas. And at the last budget forum meeting that was held literally a couple of weeks ago with National Treasury, a number of exciting proposals were already tabled there in terms of how we can begin to deal with matters of recruitment, retention, of key skills within local government. Chairperson, I've already alluded to the fact that we've helped process the Local Government Laws Amendment Bill, supported this particular committee. And then also we are doing some work on what we call the professionalization of our local government, but this work is still in its early stages. We'll probably reach the key milestone towards the end of this financial year. We have continued to roll out the Municipal Leadership Development Program, but I can say that one of the biggest challenges here continues to be that of funding. Every year we go to National Treasury on this, and every year we are told that we need to find a different way of, you know, dealing with the matters of leadership development and how we resource that. The next slide, 17, Local Government Anti-Corruption. Implementation, obviously, is now the focus. Four provinces have officially launched the Local Government Anti-Corruption Strategy, and obviously we're working on a specific strategy on how we can better communicate some of the key priorities flowing out of that. With regard to equity and development, we have a structured program of visiting every single province where we can begin to mainstream some of these issues. And then in terms of point number C, our planning is quite advanced for the 16 days of activism campaign for 2007, which literally happens 3 weeks from now. The last slide, Chairperson, on capacity building and project consolidation, we continue to engage with a number of stakeholders in the country and also key donors. And as at this point, there are over 300, if you take, since we launched Project Consolidate, the number now far exceeds 300 in terms of the number of deployments that we have made to our municipalities, and those are some of the examples there. Chairperson, we hope to finalize this national capacity building framework. I've already indicated that's been quite a difficult exercise. And then also in this year, we have managed to support and co-manage with the presidency for presidential visa. Chairperson, the very last slide, number 19, we continue to work supporting the municipalities on the matters of 2010. I've already referred to the fact that our minister chairs the host cities forum. Our work is ongoing in that regard, and while we've not finalized our draft as a department with regard to our implementation plan, we are doing a number of things in the respect of supporting our municipalities. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Members, what is the time? Time is 5 to 1. I suggest that now that we have heard what Elroy has presented to us, we must go and have lunch. And then as we eat, you think about the tough questions you want to pose to him. We will talk to the DG about the rest of the program and the day and see what we do with it. We will report the outcome of our caucus when we come back from lunch.